This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This year marks the 200th anniversary of the founding of Massachusetts General Hospital. A little earlier today, Meghna went to MGH, to its original building, the Bullfinch Building, named for the famous architect, to find out how the hospital got its start.
Well, there he is, John Collins Warren, one of the founders of MGH. This is kind of an imposing portrait of him.
Well, and he's dressed in a full black formal suit with a very elaborate black bow necktie. It should be remembered that surgeons operated in clothes like that at the time the hospital opened.
I met with Webster Bull, co-author, along with his daughter Martha, of Something in the Ether, a bicentennial history of Massachusetts General Hospital.
I often look at the two halves of a person's face, and one half is very, very intimidating, and the other half is very deeply thoughtful. I wouldn't want him to approach me with an amputation saw, let's put it that way.
You'll find out in a minute why Bull says that. It's notable, however, that the portrait of Dr. John Collins Warren captured two halves of his personality, because the founding of MGH is very much a story of the multiple sides of Boston's personality as a city. There's the surgeon and the physician, Warren and his co-founder, Dr. James Jackson. One was intimidating, the other affable. Then there's rivalry and religion, ambition and noblesse oblige. And the name Warren goes back very far in Boston and American history. His grand uncle, I guess, Joseph Warren?
Actually, his uncle.
His father's brother was
a martyr of the American Revolution, died at the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Famously later identified by Paul Revere because of the false teeth that he wore.
That's correct.
Describe to me, if you can, Boston at the time, just before the founding of the hospital. Because now, I mean, in this day and age, it's really difficult to think of the Boston area as a place that didn't actually have a major hospital, because we have so many now. But prior to 1811, that just was not true.
Well, there were only two hospitals or general hospitals in the United States, in Philadelphia and New York. In Boston, we had an almshouse, which was the poorhouse, and really didn't offer medical care such as it was at the time, was really a place where poor people went when they were sick or dying and had no other place to go.
What's also interesting to me is that Boston and Harvard in particular wanted to become a major, you know, medical school. It couldn't do so without a hospital. And as you said, because there were only two, in one in Philadelphia and one in New York, there was that age-old spirit of rivalry already between Boston and
That's
these other
certainly
cities.
True. Now, you can't study chemistry without a lab. You can't study medicine without a clinic.
Webster Bull, if I can ask, take us back into time to, you know, the early 19th century, and the fact that it was actually quite difficult to learn and practice medicine. I mean, you tell a great story in the book about how John Warren was a member of something called the Spunkers Club at Harvard.
Well, the Spunkers were a secret autopsy society. The only way you could learn about what was inside a human body as a doctor in training, when you didn't have MRIs or CAT scans, was to get a knife and open up a body. And the only body that would allow you to do that would be a dead body, and the only way to get a dead body was to steal it.
Well, I think it says a lot about the determination they had in terms of learning the art and science of medicine. Warren goes on to actually become quite a good doctor and famous in part for the speed with which he can amputate?
Yes, he was said to be able to take off an arm in 40 seconds. This was, of course, before the time of anesthesia. And so he had a very specific method. If a person was targeted for an amputation, was in the hospital for that purpose, he would come up to the person with a couple of very strong orderlies and say, "Shall we have it off now, sir?" And if the person said yes, he was grabbed by the orderlies and taken to the table, and there was no second chance to say no.
So John Collins Warren is one half of sort of the founding pair of physicians. Who's the other half?
James Jackson was considered the physician half, because even to this day, there is a surgical service and a medical service at Mass General, and hospitals are typically divided along those lines. James Jackson was definitely the one of the two who had the bedside manner.
And so Warren and Jackson knew each other from their time at Harvard?
They were both young members of old Boston families. James Jackson was interested in medicine, and the only place you could really study medicine at that time was in Europe. Mm-hmm. And so Jackson and Warren went there together. Not together, but met there and on their own separate missions.
And then they came back after their time in Europe. They came back to Boston and were basically also the heart of the then nascent Harvard Medical School.
Correct. They both had professorships, and there were only three or four at the time at Harvard Medical School, which met in a little building over on the Harvard campus before it moved over to Boston.
Webster, the thing that really I find fascinating and so Boston about the founding story of MGH is the fact that it brings together basically Boston's bluest of blue bloods. It brings together this sense of social and civic service, and also religion.
Well, you got to realize it was quite a tight little society, and a lot of the families were intermarried, and so those who lived on Beacon Hill, there was no Back Bay at that time, so those who lived on Beacon Hill knew each other, and they wrote what they called a circular letter, and it called on the Christian duty and charity of wealthy Bostonians to donate money for a hospital for the poor, and it carries the famous line, "When in distress, every man becomes our neighbor."
The circular is dated Boston, August 20th, 1810. It starts, "Sir, it has appeared very desirable to a number of respectable gentlemen that a hospital for the reception of lunatics and other sick persons should be established in this town."
Now, you mentioned lunatics, and the letter mentions lunatics. It should not be forgotten that this started as two missions. One was to take care of the sick poor, and the other was to find a place to lock away your loony aunt and uncle. What we now know as McLean Hospital out in Belmont started out as the mental health wing of Mass General, and actually was opened earlier. It was opened, I believe, in 1817, and the hospital itself didn't open until 1821. So McLean was founded as really the cash cow of this organization. In the 19th century, the hospital itself, the General Hospital, did not really make a profit. In fact, was run as a charitable organization, whereas McLean was well-funded because many proper Bostonians themselves may have had family members that needed mental health care. It's sometimes said, and I hope I'm quoting correctly, that the proper Bostonian typically has a subscription to the Boston Athenaeum, a season ticket to the symphony, and an aunt in the McLean.
So we honor 1811 because that's the year that the state of Massachusetts authorized the charter for Massachusetts General Hospital. The hospital, though it received its founding charter in 1811, it actually finally opened in 1821. And you write really well about who the first patient was. I wonder if you could read that section.
On September 3rd, 1821, the General Hospital in Boston, equipped with 60 beds, admitted its first patient, a 30-year-old saddler with syphilis. Boston memory, tinged with Puritan pride, has always held that the man caught his affliction in that den of depravity, New York City.
So the competition never wanes between the two cities.
That's right.
Well, when we think about the founding of what is now, you know, a world-renowned institution, it all comes back to these two gentlemen that we spoke about, John Collins Warren, the surgeon, and James Jackson, the physician. They were obviously men of means, but also men of vision. What about them and their legacy, do you think, still lives here in MGH as we see it today?
Well, I think there's two interesting features of these people. And one is this sense of noblesse oblige, that the wealthy must take care of the lesser advantaged. And there was also a tremendous ambition. These were young men founding Harvard Medical School, associated with Harvard College, still obviously a very prestigious institution. And yet this combination of a sense of moral obligation with an incredible personal entrepreneurial drive is something you still see here today. What strikes me most remarkably about the hospital today is you do have an extraordinary collection of intellectual giants, often very big egos, but they are harnessed to a mission that is beyond the individual, that serves the community. And it is quite striking
Well, Webster Bull, thank you so much for taking us back through this early history of the founding of, you know, what is such an institution both here and worldwide. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Megan.
I spoke with Webster Bull at the Bullfinch Building on the campus of Massachusetts General Hospital. Coming up after the break, Only a Game's Bill Littlefield stops by to talk Celts and Bruins. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.